Today's shir is Masechta Gittin Daf Ayin Aleph, and we will begin at Daf Ayin Amud Beis at the end of the third wide line. We learned in our Mishnah, Nishtatik, if somebody, Rechman al Tzlam, became mute, V'amrloi, and they asked him, Nichtav Get L'Ishtacha, should we write a get for your wife? And he says yes. So the Mishnah, and he nods his head, he can't say it, but he nods his head in approval. So the Mishnah said, we test him three times to see if he's competent. If he said no three times, when no is an appropriate answer, and yes, when yes is the right answer, that is a proof that he's competent, and we can write the get. Ask the Gemara, why can we just rely on his nodding or shaking his head? Maybe we should just be concerned that he always is shaking his head. Inami, maybe he's always nodding, and this should not be a proof of competence. Answers the Gemara. Amrav Yosef ben Menuni, Amrav Nachman, Damrina Leib Surugim. We don't ask him one question after the other, and that should be proof of his competence. We wait between the questions that we ask him, and that will be more of a proof that he's fine. Ask the Gemara, how is that a conclusive proof? But let's be concerned that he's constantly nodding his head, even if we question him at these intervals. Maybe he's always nodding because of the disease that he's suffering from. Therefore, answers the Gemara, first we ask him a question where no is the right answer, and then we ask him two questions where yes is the appropriate answer, and then train lav v'chad hein, and then we ask him two questions where no is the right answer and yes is the appropriate answer. So not asking him just questions where no is the right answer always, or yes is always the right answer. And we sort of mix it up, and if he still, and according to the Gemara, we ask him actually a total of six questions. And if after all this he still proves to be answering the properly, it's a proof that he is indeed competent. Machloikus Rishonim, that now that our Gemara has redefined the way we ask the questions, and that the Gemara says we ask him questions sort of in a not a specific order, six questions, some where yes is the right answer and some where no is the right answer, do we still need serugin? Do we still need that he should be asked the questions with a break in between? Or the fact that we're asking him all of these questions with that have different answers, that should be perhaps enough? The Beir of Shmuel, Tana, the Beir of Shmuel gives a different way of testing him. We ask him if he wants to wear winter clothing in the summer, and if he wants to wear summer clothing in the winter. Ask the Gemara, mind you, what does the Gemara mean by saying this? Ilema, do you mean glufgari v'sadine, that we ask him in the summer if he wants to wear a coat? Says the Gemara, it shouldn't be a proof if he gives the wrong answer that he is indeed incompetent. Maybe it's, even though it's the summer, he has a cold and he's sick, and therefore he's cold. Inami, or we know there are people that even during the winter are many times feel warm and therefore will wear lighter clothing. Inami chama achtei. So maybe he's sick in the wind in the summer or hot in the winter, and that's why he wants the other clothing, and it shouldn't be a proof. Says the Gemara, the test is peri. We ask him about fruits, about does he want a fruit that's out of season. So Taisha says the question isn't specifically if we ask him do we want a fruit if he wants a fruit out of season, because Taisha says many times there are fruits that even though they're not in season, but they're available. So Taisu says that what the question that we ask him is does he want to pick of fruit. If we know that where he lives, there are, this type of fruit is not growing at this time of the year, and we ask him, do you want to pick such a fruit? And he gives the wrong answer. That is the proof that he is not well. The Rishonim make an interesting point. They say, if he gives the wrong answer, as soon as he gives the wrong answer, it's a proof that he's incompetent. However, when he gives the right answer, as we just learned a moment ago, giving the right answer, we don't rely just if he gave the right answer one time. There we have to test him many times. In other words, it's much harder to prove competence than to prove incompetence. It's also interesting to note that Rav Vozner, the Tshuva Shevet Halevi, Shalos Tshuva Shevet Halevi, discusses that nowadays we obviously have much more sophisticated tests available to test the competence, the mental competence of such individuals. And he says, certainly, if someone took such a test and it proves that he's mentally competent, the halacha would be that we consider him mentally competent. But then he goes on to say, interestingly, that let's say by taking the sophisticated tests that are typically administered nowadays, it shows that he's incompetent. But if we follow the test that our Gemara just suggested we follow, which is a simpler test, he does prove to be competent. Says Rav Vozner, since our Gemara says that this is all he needs to pass, so to speak, to be considered competent, we can consider him halachically competent for what the Gemara says he's competent. We now, Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach, begin the sugya of discussing a cheresh. A cheresh, we know, is a person who's a deaf mute. The halacha views a deaf mute as a person who has no das. And as Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach explains in the Shaila HaTshuvos Micha Shloima, it's not to say that it's just some sort of a psul, it's just some sort of disqualification that the Torah says applies to a cheresh. He says the Torah considers a cheresh as someone who is mentally incompetent. And therefore he says it doesn't make a difference if the person is a Jew or not a Jew. A cheresh, the Torah considers mentally incompetent. And therefore, if a cheresh were to divorce, a cheresh marries a woman, that kedushin is only a kedushay de rabbonim. However, if a cheresh, and that's the case that our Gemara will begin to discuss now, if a person was fine, and he married, he was able to hear and speak, and he marries a woman, so we have here a regular kedusha daraisa, and now they want to terminate the marriage. And as we said, since he's a cheresh, he's not considered a bar das. In order to be able to give a get, obviously das is required. So Rav Kahana Marav teaches us there is a way for this person to still be able to communicate, and that the get should be effective. Amar Rav Kahana Marav, cheresh yochel daber mitoch ksav. If a cheresh could communicate by writing, kaisvim v'nais get lishtoy, we could give a get based on his written communication. There's a machloikis rishonim, the Rambam in the Ran. Do we have to go through the test that we just learned in the previous Gemara to prove competence? The Rambam says the writing, if he could write, there is no requirement for any further testing. The Ran says that he also has to go through the testing that we discussed in the previous Gemara. And our Sameach explains the machloikis between the Rambam and the Ran in the following manner. He says, according to the Rambam, writing is a proof of competence, so there's no need to take any other test. However, according to the Ran, writing is not a proof of confidence. It's a proof that he could do something. It's a simon It's a sign that he's able to do something, but it is not a conclusive proof of mental competence, and we therefore have to go through the testing that we discussed in the previous shiur, in the previous piece of Gemara. Om Rav Yosef, my Kamashmuan, what is Rav teaching us? Tanina, didn't we learn in our Mishnah, the Shtatik, that somebody chas v'shalom became mute, v'amalai nicht of get l'ishtecha, and we asked him, should we write a get for your wife, v'hirkim v'roishoy, and as we learned, and he nodded his head, v'aykin ha'shay shalish pamim, we test him three times, and if he answers the appropriate answers, im oimer alav lav, if a question is supposed to get a no as an answer, he says no, v'al hein hein, and a question is supposed to get yes as an answer, he gives the yes, hare elu yichtav v'yitnu, it's a clear proof that he's competent. And the way most Rishonim explained the Gemara, writing, and this is the way we're going to learn the Gemara Mitzvah Shem, is writing is considered a more effective proof than nodding the head. So if he is able, if our Mishnah said that nodding is a proof, certainly shaking that, certainly writing is a proof. So what is Rav Kahana coming to teach us? Answers the Gemara, Omalei Rav Zeira. So Rav Zeira answers, Elam Kamrit, our Mishnah is referring to a person who's only mute. Shani Elay, a person who's mute is different than a person who's a deaf mute, and therefore, for him, this would be enough. Rav Kahana's Chiddush is that even for a Cherish, for a deaf mute, we can rely on this type of communication. The Tanya, as the Brisa teaches us, Medaber Ve'Eino Shomea, if someone could speak but not hear, Zeh Cherish, he was called a Cherish. Shemeya ve'ena medaber, somebody could hear and not speak, Zeh Elim, he is called an Elim. V'zeh v'zeh, since neither of these two individuals are deaf mutes, Hareya and Pichon Chodavreim, they're considered mentally competent. Ask the Gemara, how do we know that we're supposed to define these terms in that manner? Umay, how do we know the medaber ve'ena shemeya? How do we know that somebody could speak and not hear is called a cherish? And shemei ve'ena medaber ze'ilim is called an ilim. Says more because the pasuk says v'nike cherish. What is the characteristic that defines this individual as a cherish? Loi eshma, that he's unable to hear. And what is the definition that defines him as an ilim? That lo yiftach piv, he can't open his mouth. So that's how we know what is a cherish and what is an elaim. V'bayis ema, k'daminchias, people say, what does the word elaim stand for? Ishtakel melule. His speech was taken away from him. He could hear, but unfortunately, he could no longer speak. Amrav Zera, so Rav Zera says, ikashli, hakashli. If I have any question, the following is the question. The Tanya, it says in a Braisa, Imla Yagid. The Pasuk is referring to what is known as Shvuas Ha'edus. The Torah teaches us that if someone is approached and said, you know testimony regarding a certain monetary case, and he swears falsely that he does not know, and then he admits that he did know, he's mechuyev to bring a carbon oyla v'yoyrit. Teaches us the pasuk, teaches us the brisa, that the pasuk teaches us which individual is subject to this din, im lo yagid, to a person who can't speak, prat le'ilein sheni yochel lehagid, a ilein that is unable to speak is not subject to the parashas of Shavuos Ha'edus. Ask the Gemara, amai. But why are we saying that he's exempt? Didn't Rav Kahana teach us that he could communicate through writing? And Rav Kahana says that communication through writing is considered valid communication. So ask Taisus, why is the Gemara's question only a question now that we've learned Rav Kahana's opinion? The question is a question even on our Mishnah. Our Mishnah taught us that Harkana, that just nodding the head, is considered an effective means of communication. So the Gemara should have asked from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that Harkana is considered adequate communication. And here we see regarding the din of Shavuos Ha'edus that it's not considered adequate communication. Answers Taishas. And again, we follow the concept that we've discussed previously, that we are following in our understanding of the Shir, the opinion of the Rishonim, that writing is a more effective means of communication than nodding. So they explain in the following manner. If the halacha were to be that if we're just going to learn our Mishnah, we could say that our Mishnah is referring to a get, and by a get, there is no din of haggadah, there is no din of edus, where testimony has to be given. And therefore, as far as a get is concerned, nodding is enough. Comes Rav Kahana at the beginning of our shir and says that not only is nodding a means of communication, but even writing. Now, obviously, Rav Kahana is not just speaking about gittin, because if he was only speaking about gittin, then we don't need him to tell us that we need to write. For gittin, our Mishnah already taught us explicitly that nodding is enough. So it must be the Rav Kahana is coming to teach us that not that communication through writing is also an effective means of communication in all areas of halacha. Ask the Gemara, if that is what he's teaching us, that that's an effective means of communication in all areas of halacha, so why is this person exempt from the din of Shavuos Ha'edus? Answers the Gemara, Amalei Abaya, says Abaya, we can't ask a question from there. Because Shani Edis Karmit, you want to ask a question from Edis? Shani Edis, the Torah tells us that the only way we could have an effective Edis is the Rachmana Ammam Apiyam Veloi B'Ksavam. Edis, testimony, can only be given through verbal, oral testimony, not through writing. And as the Mefarshim all explain, when one speaks, it's a much more effective manner of communicating. There's the inflection and the expression that's all included in speaking that doesn't exist in just writing. And therefore, the Torah teaches us to be considered an effective testimony. It has to be an actual speaking, not just in writing. But that doesn't mean that writing is not considered an effective communication. And in fact, from here, the Chasam Sofer and many other Paiskim say that we see that a Shvua made through communicating by writing rather than verbally expressing the Shvua is considered a Shvua. Because the Gemara is teaching us, they say, that this person perhaps should be subject to the din of Shvuas Ha'edus. Now, Shvuas Ha'edus, we said, is that he swore falsely. How did he swear? He can't speak. It must be that he wrote the Shvua, and it's still considered that he made a Shvua. So we see that as far as Shvua is concerned, writing is considered an effective means of creating a Shvua. The Noida Behuda wants to draw a distinction between a Shvuas Bitui, where the Torah uses the words bitui svosayim, that there the shvuah is only effective if it was expressed orally, versus other types of shvuahs, like the shvuah ha'edus that we're discussing in our Gemara, that it doesn't have to be spoken about orally. The Noi Behuda also says that a cheirin, he speaks about in those days it was very common that when somebody printed a sefer, wrote a sefer, printed a sefer, he would have a cheirim written. I guess we would consider it like a copyright. It was very expensive to print sforim, so they wanted to protect that somebody shouldn't be able just to print the sefer. So Noida Behuda says that a cheirim, we usually found that those charamas were written, and it has the same din of a shvuah, and it's considered a valid cheirim. There are the paiskim that want to suggest that the reason the cheirim is effective is because it's signed, and the signing by the whoever is affecting the cheirim is what makes it effective. The Pesach Tshuva disagrees. The Pesach Tshuva says that a cheirim that's only done in writing perhaps would not be effective. The question that comes up is regarding Divrei Torah. We know that the halacha is that one may not learn in the may not learning without making Birchas HaTorah. And the question that comes up is, if somebody is writing Divrei Torah, is that considered like he's learning and he has to make Birchas HaTorah or not? The Shulchan Aruch makes the following distinction. He says, certainly if somebody is learning, you have to make Birchas HaTorah if he's learning speaking. If he's only being Maharer B'Divrei Torah, he's only thinking about Divrei Torah, Shulchan Aruch says Birchas HaTorah do not have to be made. But if somebody writes Divrei Torah, Birchas HaTorah has to be made. And how do we explain the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch? So some say the Shulchan Aruch follows our Gemara that says the writing is an effective means of communication. Others say that when one is writing Divrei Torah, it's very likely that while he's writing the Divrei Torah, he'll say a word, and that's speaking out loud, which everybody agrees Birchas HaTorah is required. And the Shev Yaakov has a very interesting explanation why writing Divrei Torah requires Birchas HaTorah. He says, what is the source for the requirement to learn Torah? He says, because as we say in Kriya Shema, the Pasuk says, Vishinantam Livonecha. We have to transmit Torah to future generations. Says the Shev Yaakov, any type of learning that includes, that will be involved in the transmission of Divrei Torah, is considered Vishinantam Levanecha. So certainly if one is writing Divrei Torah, which will be left for people to learn those Divrei Torah, it's included in the category of Vishinantam Levanecha, and one would have to make Birchas HaTorah. This question is also related. If one could be Mekayim the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer when he just writes the Omer, certainly L'chatchila one should not do the mitzvah that way, but there are places that say that if somebody only did the Omer of a certain day by writing it, it would be acceptable. The Chassam Sofer and many other Paiskim also say that just like we know there's an Isser to count Jews, it's also Isser to count Jews by writing. Although the Chassam Sofer wants to make a distinction between if somebody is taking a census and he's writing down the names of people, that would be Isser, where if somebody just has a list of people and he's copying that list, that would be Mutter. But now that our Gemara has so strongly indicated that one has to be careful, that to be considered valid edus, it has to be oral, so the Rishonim ask that we know that we constantly speak about shtaris, we constantly speak about documents, but how could a document, how could a shtar be effective? It's ksav, it's something that's written, it's not oral. So the Baal HaMor explains that the concept of a shtar is similar to the concept of a dos bal din kmei edim dami. If I write a shtar, I write a document that I owe someone money, so that is a situation, I'm admitting that I owe them money, and therefore it's certainly effective. The Ramban says that indeed a shtar is effective is a chidush haTorah. Really, it shouldn't be effective. The Torah was mechadish that shtaris in the cases where they are effective are indeed effective. The Rambam has a very interesting opinion. The Rambam says that the reason shtaris are effective is that midaraisa they really ought not to be effective. It's only midrabbanan that they're effective, and the reason being that the rabbanan saw that if we're not going to give people the ability to create transaction through documents, all business transactions will cease. It'll impede business transactions, and that's why Chazal, according to the Rambam, said that shtaris are effective. The Rabbeinu Tam says a different opinion. He says, what is the power of a shtar? He says, the power of a shtar is that when the shtar is written, Edom sign it. When the Edom sign the shtar, says Rabbeinu Tam, they're acting like regular witnesses. That they're saying and they're seeing what's going on. Just people the witnesses are not always going to be available to give over what they actually saw. Therefore, they put it down in writing. But it's not that the shtar, it's not that the writing is effective. It's that the witnesses are effective, and they remain effective through their signing of the shtar, even when they're no longer here. And that's actually pshat in what the Gemara says. We learned many times in Masechet Ksubos, Eidim HaChsum Al Shtar is Kami Shenechgru Edusan BeBezdin. Ask the Gemara, Meisvei, the Gemara asks, it says in a Braisa, Shem Shabbat Kenosai L'Gitin, the same type of test that we could do for competence regarding Gitin, Kach Bait Kenosai, we could rely on this. L'masos is for business transactions. L'matonis is for gifts. L'edis is for edis or yerushas. So it says here, ketanim midi edis. It clearly teaches us that for edis, we can rely on a cherish. Abaya said that we can never rely on a deaf mute who could only communicate through writing. Answers the Gemara. Amar Rav Yosef ben Manumi, Amar Rav Sheshes, Beidus Isha. This price is referring to Eidus Isha, the Kilabar Rabbanan. We find many times, the Gemara Masechta Yevam teaches us, that if someone's husband is missing, even though normally we always need two kosher witnesses to rely on testimony, the Torah teaches us that in this case, where we're coming to say that the person is not alive, we can rely on one aid, even if that aid is apostle aid, and the reason being because Chazal taught us that Mishmiguna Akilu Barabonan Isha Daika Mintzaba. And here too is another such example. Even though normally we don't rely on the written communication of a deaf mute, here we will. Ask the Gemara for Ketani Yerushas, but the Braisa also taught that we rely on him regarding same testimony regarding inheritance. How can we rely on a cherish who's only communicating by writing? And it says the Gemara, Am Rav Avuah, is referring to Yerushas B'nai Bechor. Midaraisa, we know a Bechor deserves a double share of his father's inheritance. But should the father decide that the Bechor should only get a single share, he has to say so before he dies. And since it's his money, so he has a lot of authority. For this we can rely on a cherish communicating in writing. The Rishonim say similarly that even though the halacha is that all children, besides the din of bechor, all sons should divide the yerusha equally. But again, if a father wants to give one son more or less, here too we could rely on the written communication of a cherish. Says the Gemara, Ketani Miyis, L'masos L'matanis. The Braisa clearly taught us that we could rely on the cherish for business transactions and gifts. My love Alma. So isn't that a proof that written communication of a cherish is effective? Says the Gemara, Loi. The Braisa is referring to the day when he wants to write his own documentation. That's what we can rely on, but not regarding the world. Meisvei, ask the Gemara. It says in a Braisa, Cherish, a deaf mute. Loi holcha by acheri mizoyosov. We don't rely on his gestures. Vachkvitzoyosov. Not his gestures, not his lip movements, not regarding his writing. The only time we rely on that is by metaltlin. And as the Rishonim explained, the reason Chazal were lenient regarding metaltlin, we want that this cherish should be able to live. If he's unable to communicate, if all of his communications are considered halachically unacceptable, he'll never be able to survive. So Chazal were lenient regarding metaltlin, only regarding metaltlin. But this is contradicted to what Rav Kahana Merav said, that we could always rely on a cherish through his written communication. says the Gemara, indeed, this is the subject of a machloikus tanoim, tanoihi. The Tanya and Rav Kahana Marav is going to be following the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Tanya Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, Memedvar Mamurim, when can't we rely on the written communication of a cheresh? Becheresh mikara. If somebody was born as a deaf mute, Aval Pikerich v'nishcharish, if somebody was born able to speak, and then he nebuch became a deaf mute, who kaisiv, he could write a get, vein chaisman. So now, we could say that Rav Kahana Marav is following the opinion of Shimon Gamliel, although we've qualified what Rav Kahana Marav says. Till now we learned that any deaf mute, if he's competent enough to communicate by writing, will be considered a legitimate way of communication, legitimately competent. Now we're learning it's only such an individual who was once mentally competent and now no longer is able to speak and hear. We can rely on his written communication. Ask the Gemara, v'cheresh mekaraloi, is the halacha that someone who was always a deaf mute is not able to divorce his wife through written communication? Ask the Gemara, the Mishnah says, Masechta Yevamoth, Kshem Shekonsa B'Remiza, just like a cheresh marries a woman through Remiza, Kach might see a B'Remiza. There the marriage, as we said at the beginning of our shir, was a marriage midrabbonon, because he was only a cheresh, but then the Chazal recognized that marriage, so they also recognize the divorce done through that means of communication. So why are we saying, why is Rav Shimon Gamliel saying that a cheresh never has the ability to divorce his wife? Answers the Gemara, Ibe ishtoi, if someone was a cheresh when he married his wife, then the halach is hochinami, he could divorce his wife the same way he married her. Hoch maiskin, here we're referring b'yevimtoi. We're talking about a case where he married the woman because she was his yevama, his brother died without children. And here, Rav Shimon Gamliel is telling us that such a man, a cheresh, cannot divorce his yevama by communicating through writing. So the Gemara analyzes exactly what is the case. Yevim tamiman. What was the status of this person's brother? Ilayim the nafalei ma'achav cheresh. If we're referring to a situation where there were two brothers, Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven married a woman, and Reuven was a cheresh, and now Reuven passed away, and Shimon does Yibum. So the question is, this woman's relationship to her first husband, that the brother-in-law is assuming and taking over that relationship, was always a weak relationship, for he also was a cheresh. So the halacha should be that k'shem shiknis sasa b'remiza, just like the first brother married her b'remiza, and he's extending and continuing that marriage, and just like the first brother, since he was a cheresh when he married her, could have divorced her with remiza, the yavam should also be able to divorce her. Kach yitziyasa, he also should be able to divorce the b'remiza. Ella, what happened was the nafalei ma'achav pikeach, that the first brother was married to her, and he was a pikeach. We had a full-fledged marriage. Now, the first brother dies, and the second brother, who's Rachman Tzlan Acheresh, is going to have to do Yibum Mechalitza. So as the Gemara speaks in Masechta Yevamos, Chalitza is not an option for this Cheresh, because an integral part of the Chalitza process is speaking, as the Gemara taught us in Masechta Yevamos, and speaking, as the Pasuk uses the words there, Va'ansa, Va'anu, and that's what we learned from the Pasuk of Va'anu Alevim, they have to speak orally out loud. Certainly the Cheresh cannot do Chalitza. So the only option available to this Cheresh is to do Yibum. This Yibum that he's doing is taking over his brother's marriage, and it's a Yibum Midaraisa. So his divorcing her with Remiza, which isn't effective Midaraisa, cannot break a relationship that is recognized midaraisa. V'bayisayma. And that Gemara says, lo'olam nenafle ma'achav cherish. We could say that the brother who died was also a cherish. We asked if the brother was a cherish, and he's a cherish. So just like the brother could have ended the marriage with Ramiza, he who's assuming that marriage should also be able to end the marriage with Ramiza. Says the Gemara, it's a gzeira. Gzeira ochiv cherish ata ochiv pikeach. Chazal said that since, as we just explained, that if the brother was a pikeach, he cannot terminate the marriage with Ramiza. So too, Chazal said, even if the brother was a cherish, he cannot terminate the marriage with Ramiza. Ask the Gemara, if Chazal are making these types of gzeiris, ihochi ishtainami, that even his wife, where a person married a woman as a cherish, he should not be able to divorce her. He should not be able to divorce her because we should make a gzeira and not be able to divorce Ramiza. Answers the Gemara, yivimta b'yivimta mechlefa. The Yavam that fell to him from his brother who's a cherish versus the Yavam that fell to him from his brother's pikeach are very similar situations, and they could get confused. Ishta b'yavimtoi, however, of wife and his Yavama la'michlefa, there is no room for such confusion. Ask the Gemara, is this true? Umigazrin are a cherish or a pikeach. The Gemara said that even if somebody's brother was a cherish and he's a cherish, he can't divorce her with Ramiza because we make gzeira cherish ot b'keach. Ask the Gemara v'tanan. We learned a Mishnah in Masech Yevamos. Shnei achim cherishin. We have two brothers who are both cherishin. Nesuah shtei achios pichos, who are married to two women who are regular, healthy. Or the two sisters are both deaf mutes. And two sisters that are, one is Bekech and one is Cherish. And now one of the brothers die. So as we learned in Masechta Yevamos, even though there's a din of Yibam, that if a brother dies without children, his wife falls to Yibam, the halacha is if that's the only issue. However, if the woman that falls to the brother-in-law, to Yibum, is a erva to him, like in our case, where she's an achos ishtoi, then there is no din of Yibum uchalitza. Continues the Mishnah. The ken shtei achyos charshes. You have two deaf-mute sisters, nesuas l'shnei achim pichin, who are married to two competent brothers, or l'shnei achim cherishin, or both brothers are cherishin, or l'shnei achim echim pikeich v'echim cherish. The halacha is, in all these cases, harei l'paturis min achalitza min yibam, because of achyos ishtoi, which excludes the din of yibam. However, v'mihayu nachrius, but if the two wives were not related to each other, and one of the brothers dies without children, their halach is yichnesu. They could do yibum v'mratz loitzion, and if the brother who's doing yibum is assuming the marriage of a cherish, because he's, then the halach is v'mratz yotziu. They could divorce them through communicating by writing. So we see that we don't make a gzeira of cherish ato b'keach. Says the Gemara, we have to explain that according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it's referring to a case where the first brother was healthy and the second brother was a cherish. Since the first marriage was a marriage midaraisa, this cherish now, when he does yibum, also does a full-fledged yibum, and therefore he can't divorce his wife Ramiza. But if the wife that fell to him to Yibam was from a marriage to a cherish, he would indeed be able to terminate it Ramiza. We mentioned before that the Tanakhama's opinion seemed to be that never is the cherish's communication through writing effective, whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel, as we just finished explaining, does hold it effective under certain circumstances. So now what the Gemara is coming to discuss is to teach us that one should not make the mistake of believing that Rav Shimon Gamliel is not arguing the Tanakhama, he's just explaining the Tanakhama, but rather, says the Gemara, Rav Shimon Gamliel and Tanakhama are arguing. Om Rav Yochanan, chlukin alof chaverov, Rav Shimon Gamliel. Om Rabaya, afanan nami tanina. We could prove that. Nishtis, if a woman became deranged, lo yoytzi, she can never be divorced. We'll discuss this more soon. Nischarishu nishtata, if he became never a deaf mute or a shaita, lo yoytzi olamis. And the Gemara focuses my olamis. What does the Mishnah want to teach us with the word olamis? Lav afagav diyochel adaber. If to teach us that he can't communicate through writing. The writing is not an effective means of communication. Clearly, the Tanakhama doesn't follow the opinion of Shimon Gamliel that a cheresh could communicate through writing. Omra Papa, ilav the Shemini Rabbi Yochanan. If not, that Rabbi Yochanan taught us that the Tanakhama and Shimon Gamliel are arguing, have amino Rabbi Shimon Gamliel lefrushit tam the Tanakhama also. We might have thought that the way to understand Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is actually coming to explain the opinion of the Tanakhama. It says the word Olamis, which we seem to think the extra word Olamis is coming to teach us that they can never get divorced, even Metoich HaKsav. Maybe what Olamis comes to say, Avgav D'chazina L'dcharef, that even if we see that he's mentally competent, if he can't write, then the halacha is that he can't get divorced. But perhaps if he could write, even the Tanakhama will agree that he can get divorced. Inami, or we could say that the word Olamis is coming to teach us what Rabbi Yitzchak taught us. Dom Rabbi Yitzchak, Tva Toira, Shaita Miskareshes. Midaraisa, even if a wife, Rechmona Litzlan, became a Shaita, she should be able to get divorced. Mida to have a Pikas Bakarcha, just like the Aloch is that a woman who is to be Kachas, Midaraisa, a husband could divorce her without her consent. So we see that the consent of the wife is not required. So we should be able to divorce a wife who, Rachmana Litzlan, became a shaita. And why tak is the halacha? Ma tam amru enimus gereshes, shlo yinig ba minig hefker. They shouldn't treat her improperly. If this woman is a shaita, now her husband will divorce her, she'll be left in the street, and that's why Chazal said she can't be divorced. There's interesting discussion amongst the Paiskim how to understand this Gemara. The Rishonim seem to learn that there are two types, the two categories of a woman who's a shaita. There's a woman who nebuch is so bad, eina yochayla lishmar is atzma, veina yochayla lishmar is gita. She's completely deranged. Such a woman can't be divorced even midoraisa. Why? Because an essential part of a get process is the woman receiving the get. This woman, any chayil lishmer atzma, any chayil lishmer skita, is incapable of even receiving the get. And such a woman can't get a get even with a raisa. But then we have a woman who's a higher level function. She's any chayil lishmer skita, of chayil lishmer atzma. She's not that bad. And there, it's a gzeres chazal, as we just learned in the Gemara, that the halacha is that midarabanan, she's a husband can't divorce her. It's interesting to point out, we know we have a cherem derbeinu gerushim, that a husband is not allowed to take a second wife. The Marsham quotes the Chacham Tzvi that since, as we learned in today's shir, that if a cheresh marries a woman, that kedushin are only a kedusha derabanan, and regarding that kedushin, the cherem Rabbeinu Gershon wasn't said. However, other paiskim disagree with the Chacham Tzvi, and they say that the cherem Rabbeinu Gershon was said regarding all marriages, even the marriage of a cherish, which, as we've been learning, is only a kedusha derabanan.